You're listening to A Closer Look. I'm Lori Townsend. We're all affected by the things that happen in our lives. A traumatic event can change the way we think about the world around us, the way we feel. But what happens when an entire population, an entire culture, has experienced trauma repeatedly? Such is the case with Alaska Natives and American Indians, Jews, and more recently, refugees arriving in Alaska from Africa and elsewhere. Those accumulated traumas can have repercussions for generations to come. The term for that is historical trauma, and that's our subject today on A Closer Look. To start off our program, we have a report from Ann Hillman. Anne spoke with some mental health experts about how historical trauma has affected Alaska Natives and continues today.
In January of 2012, Sophie Jenkins' son committed suicide.
You know, as a boarding school parent, I parented my kids in guesswork.
Jenkins was sent to boarding school as a young child and didn't communicate much with her own parents. The only lesson they passed on to her was to stay strong. She says she took that to mean you shouldn't talk about problems, that it was better just to let them go. She didn't learn any coping skills to pass on to her own children.
Be strong is not useful today when our people are exploding their anger and are not expressing it appropriately.
Her son's suicide made her realize that she was not connected to her own culture, and in turn, she couldn't pass on values and connections to her own children. She says she and her son were impacted by historical trauma. Rose Dominic is the director of preventative services with the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. She says that historical trauma is how negative events experienced by older generations can impact younger generations. In the case of Alaska Natives, some of the pain started when Western contact brought deadly diseases to rural communities. Parents died, leaving behind hundreds of orphans who were raised in institutions, and people didn't have any time, or didn't know how, to process the pain.
We lost so much of our way of life, our parenting skills, who we are, how we learn to live as healthy human beings. Those are things that are taught by our families, our parents. You can't learn those kinds of things in institutions.
Later, many children were sent off to boarding schools. She says these events created a disconnect.
It's like an underlying current that drives how you are, how you behave. It's there. It's like a tornado inside that really impacts how you relate to people.
And many boarding school students were taught to feel ashamed of their identities. These factors led to generations of individuals who couldn't process their pain and turned to alcoholism or other types of abuse. The next generation repeated the abuse. Dominic says that the only way to heal this pain and break the cycle is by talking about it and trying to understand it.
When you talk, the words hook the hurt and they fall on the floor. People step on it, it becomes trash. It doesn't have a tug on you anymore. It doesn't impact you anymore.
Dominic stresses that acknowledging historical trauma is not about continuing to blame others for today's problems. It's about healing from past pain and starting again. Jenkins, who is also a family spirit coordinator for YKHC, says people need to understand how the generations of pain changed the blueprint of their parents' lives.
Once you know what the blueprint is, you get to understand, oh yeah, no wonder. And there's no room for any more anger, resentment towards the parents, you know.
And once people set that anger aside, they can start rebuilding themselves, their families, and their cultures from a healthy place. For APRN, I'm Ann Hillman.
In a few minutes, we'll get back to discussing historical trauma and Alaska Natives. But Alaska Natives aren't the only people living in Alaska with an experience like that. Many immigrants from other countries also come from a background of trauma in their home countries. Karen Ferguson is the state refugee coordinator and works with the refugee program at Catholic Social Services. She says refugees often have their own traumatic experiences piled on top of their family's historical trauma.
For a refugee, it gets a little bit confused because there will both be the trauma that they may have personally experienced, and then there's also those responses and actions that they have and those emotions about a situation that have to do with the trauma that their family members and generations past have experienced that make them see a situation potentially different than the next person.
One thing that is different from the Alaska Native experience is that the refugees she works with are in a new place. They've left the location of their trauma and started over.
I don't think that that lessens either situation. It's just a matter of they could be seen and experienced very differently. So for an Alaska Native or American Indian, some of the very issues that the historical trauma were based on are still right here. For a Bhutanese refugee, there may be nothing here that seems similar to what the historical trauma was based on, and yet they could still have a response that would be based on that old history of fear of authority, a fear of media that actually has no basis in the United States but comes from the past. But they're just going to look potentially very different, and I think the interplay of the historical trauma with the current context possibly could be very different depending on whether the historical trauma happened here in this country or somewhere else.
To dive a little bit more into the experience of historical trauma that happened right here in Alaska, we spoke with two people who have studied and taught about it. Jim LaBelle is a retired professor of Alaska Native Studies at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He is part Inupiaq and spent much of his own childhood at boarding schools. Tina Woods is Aleut from St. Paul Island. She recently received her Ph.D. in clinical community psychology from UAA and is the Community Health Services Regional Administrator for the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association. Jim started off the conversation.
The way I look at historical trauma has a lot to do with change, unseen forces, and what's happening to a group of people are, added upon added to one another. I'll give you an example. First, 200 years ago came the new Westerners, and they brought forms of genocide, slavery, disease, and especially the disease and illness, there was no immunities to them. And so from about 1750 to 1940, the Alaska Native population declined by over 75%, and primarily from disease and illness, but also by these other things like genocide and enslavement and relocation. And as each thing occurred in that generation, they were profoundly impacted by that. And when they had children, perhaps not even knowing that they did, they gave that to their children and grandchildren. So, and the succeeding generations added their own traumas to the family. So today, all these years later, we have a tremendous amount of, social ills and whatnot, disproportionate to our numbers. And we have some of the highest alcoholism rates, for example. Over 60% of children in foster care are Alaska Native children. Over 40% of men and women incarcerated are Alaska Native. And so when you look at all of those are symptoms, basically, of those underlying events, and that's the trauma. What we're dealing with and what folks like Tina are doing are working with this new generation of families and communities trying to say, we need to break into that cycle and we need to stop repeating ourselves. We need to find ways to heal. And we have the strengths, that, and it's built into our own culture. So let's use that rather than having someone else impose solutions on us.
Tina, if you want to comment on that, you know, what historical trauma is, that's fine, certainly. But I would also like for you to comment on how, why it's important for Alaska Natives and other people who have experienced this trauma to understand this history.
Quite often a question posed to me is, how are people going to heal if we continue to, the analogy that had been used to me before is, you know, we're beating a dead horse. We're, you know, if we're going to continue to talk about it, how are people going to heal? And what I like to explain to people is that we haven't really had the chance to heal. We haven't had the chance to talk about it, as Jim LaBelle alluded to the fact that, or even in that clip that we heard, and among my own people who are have taken the Russian Orthodox faith, the elders have taught my people to forgive and to move forward and not to talk about it. I asked an elder from our region, I said, you know, before my mom died, I said, how come my mom never talked about what happened? Why didn't she ever talk about the Aleut internment? She was a part of that Aleut internment and that trauma among our people. And what the elder told me was, your mom didn't talk about it because when we did talk about it, people didn't believe us because it wasn't documented in the history books. So people thought we were liars. And so what we've learned to do is we've learned to just accept it, perhaps sweep it under the carpet, perhaps just forget about it, forgive, and move forward. However, as Jim had suggested earlier, when our people don't talk about these things, they internalize it psychologically. And when elders talk about mind, body, and spirit, you know, the wisdom in that is pretty powerful. If you internalize something that has happened very traumatically in the past, your body will react negatively. Elders teach that if you compact anger or you compact stress and you compact a lot of these issues that you did not talk about, it can turn into cancer. It can turn into heart disease. It can turn into, you know, all those biological illnesses that connect to the mind. And so when I think about historical trauma, I think about something very grand that is often difficult for people to explain, very, very difficult to explain, because our people lived it.
What does identifying as someone with that history do to a person's attitude toward culture and outlook on life? Is there a danger to identifying yourself as someone from a traumatized group to thinking about it too much? Jim?
Wow, that's an interesting question. The way I see it, that I'll just use myself for an example. Having spent 10 years in boarding school and constantly being told that we were to be ashamed of our parents and grandparents, to be ashamed of our language and our culture and our traditions, when you're taught that at such a young age as I was 8, and I did see children as young as 5, and we were away from our communities and our families for 9-10 months out of the year. Well, and then you add the number of years to this, and I was in boarding school for 10 years. So I had a real, I started believing. I mean, I started instinctively being ashamed, or not instinctively, but I certainly was ashamed of my mother, our culture. I wouldn't say anything publicly to demonstrate that I knew any of this. Or if I did, I was ashamed. In Fairbanks, if I saw my mother walking down 2nd Avenue, I would go across the street just to not be seen with her. And when you're 13 and 14, that was how strongly I felt and how I institutionalized, I guess, I was to those stories. And of course, later I'm going saying, what in the heck was I thinking to do this? So I knew if it was in me or I felt a lot of these things, I know that other students, other men and women have had to go through some variation of that.
Do you think that my even asking a question such as that kind of is revealing as far as, well, there's one of those ignorances that non-Native people have because there is a disconnect there from someone who hasn't experienced something like that to even ask a question about, do you think that there's a danger in associating with this too much? And you answered that quite passionately about the importance of understanding those things. So it seems like that my asking the question is almost sort of part of the problem, is that non-Native peoples have a hard time understanding and never will be able to understand. So how can you help people sort of come along and realize the importance of these issues? Who wants to take that?
So, I have to start off by saying that as a Native person myself, that I didn't really know the history of my people. You know, I'm pushing 40 in a couple of years, and at this age, just within the last 6 years of my Western education, I began to even learn about the history of my own people. And so that I'm thankful for. I'm very thankful that this journey, these last 6 years of my education, pushed me to ask questions about my own people. In addition, I was also blessed with an opportunity to teach 3 different Alaska Native-focused courses at the University of Alaska Anchorage. One was called Alaska Native Traditions, Oral Tradition Storytelling as a Therapeutic Tool. One was called Alaska Native Traditions and Values, and one was called Alaska Native Cultural Perspectives on Mentoring and Leadership, at which time I met people like Jim LaBelle, Wilson Justin, also invited people like Alice Petrovelli, Liz Medicine Crow, Yari, Kingvuk. I apologize for not pronouncing that correctly, but these are all Alaska Native leaders and elders that know our history. And so I would bring them into the classroom. Now, keep in mind, these classrooms are all introduction to Alaska Native traditions and values. And in a classroom of a good 25 students, it would be diverse, but you would also have a lot of Alaska Native students in their early 20s or so. And one of the most profound questions asked by a non-Native student, there were 2 questions that I will never forget. And one of them was, why is it that this is an introduction course to Alaska Native traditions and values, and half the people and more are Alaska Natives in this room? And a young person had commented, you know, straight from their rural community, began to talk about how their grandma never talks about the past, and they crave to know what happened in the past to understand the present. And another individual said, you know, Tina, I'm African American. One drop of African American blood, you can't take that away from me. I'm African American. I don't understand, with Native people, you have to have blood quantum to qualify as an Alaska Native individual. I don't get it. I don't understand. These types of questions and these types of settings at the university have provoked me to ask questions, you know, sometimes ignorant questions, just not understanding myself and my people. So my personal opinion is I think it's good when people ask questions, because perhaps sometimes even us as Native people, we don't understand and we're still learning. I'm still learning about what happened to my mother and my grandparents during a very traumatizing event among our people.
How does the flip side of that would be, what does ignoring the cultural history do to a person or a collective group of people? You've talked a little bit about elders sometimes not wanting to discuss these things. What's the danger in that, in not talking about these things?
There's so many different perspectives on that question. The danger from a policy perspective, if you look at it from the federal and state agencies who govern our traditional foods, by ignoring our cultures, by not understanding who we are as people and how dependent we are on the earth and on the foods from the land and sea, they make these really almost crazy rules and regulations that have a profound impact on Native people, almost creating, criminals in our own communities for trying to live a lifelong way. Just by the mere introduction of rules and regulations that oftentimes we never had any part of or participation in the discussion or decision. By ignoring it on our personal side, our community side, we're almost going to aid and abet the destruction of our cultures, because we need to talk about these things in order to try to capture or recapture or find ways to reclaim our languages, our traditions. So we need to do that at all costs.
And want to add something, Tina?
Sure. And in addition to that, we need a safe setting to be able to talk about it. And we need to be able to do it around people that understand us and that can validate some of the feelings that we're having. So using the university and teaching those classes as an example, many of those classes that I taught, students ended up in tears because they're through guest speakers that have come in and Alaska Native leaders that would talk about our history, it triggered something in these young people to begin to understand themselves and to begin to validate what they're seeing in their villages, what they're seeing at home, what they're experiencing within their own community, what they experienced growing up as a Native person for some in the city and being ashamed of being Native and not understanding why was I so ashamed when I'm so proud today to be who I am. And so, that's just one thing that I really want to mention is that our people need a safe place, such as, an example, the Indigenous Talking Circle, to be validated for what they feel and they can't describe because it's so abstract. And once people begin to talk about it and begin to understand what happened, first of all, to understand the past so that they can understand the present and go forward, people will begin to heal, and they need a safe place to do that.
Well, I really appreciate your time, and my last question would be, ideally, what you're doing all this work to help people feel good about themselves, because if you're grounded well and feeling good, you can accomplish anything, of course. Ideally, what would you want the next 10 to 20 years look like? What would you want the next couple of decades to look like for the growth of both individual and collective self-esteem within Native populations?
Well, for me, it would be for our state government to recognize the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous People, that we have a right to our culture, a right to our language, a right to our foods. And right now, the state's policies don't recognize that. And we need to figure out a way to, for the state to acknowledge our life ways and our customary practices in many respects, that's going to help the esteem of our peoples, just by that very simple thing in itself.
And then I guess for me, it would be, just as I have experienced, to see our society open their minds to both worlds. I have a very strong respect for my Western education, and I am very excited and pleased to and proud to say that, in addition, throughout this journey, I've had people within the Western system, academia in particular, that have respected who I am as an Indigenous person, have respected the teachings that I've been given, and have honored that while teaching me the Western way. And so my, hopefully one day before I leave this earth, I pray to see the day that people in general become so open-minded and appreciative of each other's worlds and take the time to really learn about me rather than make an assumption, and vice versa.
I spoke with Tina Woods and Jim LaBelle in Anchorage. To end our program, one final thought from another young Alaska Native leader. Yvonne Peter is Gwich'in from Arctic Village. He leads cultural healing workshops that build on the same ideas Tina and Jim discussed. He encourages young people to learn and understand their family and cultural history, and at the same time to move forward with self-determination, both personally and politically, as Jim LaBelle mentioned. But Yvonne encourages people to be patient with themselves in their journeys. It may take more time to feel proficient in both Western and traditional ways. It took him a decade.
For myself, as I became aware of where it is in the direction I wanted to head, when I started out, I was a high school dropout. I had a long ways to go. I had been through several traumatic experiences growing up as a kid. And, so the first 10 years from the time that I was coming to realize some of this stuff was really working on my own healing, just becoming healthier as an individual, overcoming some of the addictive behaviors that weren't healthy for me that I had developed by that time, learning about the history of what had happened with my mother and grandparents and great-grandparents' generations so I could understand why they made some of the choices that they made and how that impacted me. And so it was a process, of working through those things. And so... When we put too much on our plate, it becomes overwhelming, and it feels overwhelming, and we live in a very stressed out way, which isn't healthy for us either as individuals. So it's kind of having that long-term vision of the trajectory of our life path and what it is that we're working to and the direction that we want to head. And as long as it's a healthier direction for us, where we can feel good about who we are and be there for our friends and our family in a healthy way, then it's a good thing. And, it might take me till I'm 90 to learn some of the things that I want to learn right now, but that's okay, as long as I'm continuing to move in that path. I think it becomes dangerous when we become stagnant, when we're not pursuing our own healing, wellness, pursuit of knowledge and understanding about the world around us, because life is a blessing and it's incredible, and there's endless possibilities for what we can pursue in life and our own development and knowledge around us and our relationships with people. And to be aware of that and pursuing it, I think, is part of the beauty that life is for us.
Thanks for listening. I'm Lori Townsend.